Welcome to the DUC Migrating to Australia podcast. On this episode, I'm joined by Joe Reed. Joe is a current client of the Down Under Centre and he's waiting for his visa. He's at the 10-month waiting time and him and his partner have decided to take the plunge and travel before the visa gets granted. So, Joe, cheers for taking the time and welcome, mate.
No dramas, happy to jump on.
So, yours is a little bit of an interesting story because where are you currently, mate?
I'm currently sat on a balcony in Pai, Thailand.
There you go. And how long have you been there for, mate?
We got here at the end of September. So we started in Bangkok and we've gradually been making our way north. We've got a bit of time up north and then going south.
Awesome. So, Joe, let's get a little bit of a background on you, mate. So you're the main applicant for the visa and what's your occupation?
I'm a marketing specialist.
Okay. And what stage of the visa are you up to, mate?
So we're waiting for the visa grant from the government, specifically with Victoria.
You being the main applicant, let's run through the journey that you've had so far, and then we'll come back to Thailand, and then we'll talk a bit about what you expect in Oz and where you're planning on living in Australia. So firstly, why Australia, mate?
Why Australia? So it's a funny one. When I grew up, I always said to myself I'd never go to Australia. And then about 5 years ago, 5.5 years ago, my partner Deanna turned around to me and said, look, I want to go traveling. So so I was living a pretty good life at the moment. I was working for Sky TV in the UK and their social media team, and I was kind of set. And so I said to her, do you know what, you can go and we'll call it quits then. And then about 6 months before she was due to leave. And then about a month and a half, 2 months before she was due to go, I was sat in a conference and I thought to myself, I just can't do this anymore. So I went home that night and I booked my my flights to Australia. I booked my visa and I said to her, look, I'm going to come with you. So we lived the life out in Australia for a year on a working holiday visa. We worked on Rottnest Island. We worked in Broome and we came back at the end of 2019 and you know, our perspectives, particularly mine, definitely changed, and England just didn't feel like home anymore. So we've kind of made it our mission to get back ever since.
Yeah, good on you, mate. So the year work and holiday visa, I mean, it's such a great opportunity for people to have a bit of a try before you buy and start investing lots of money into visas. Rottnest Island is pretty good. And just give us a rundown. I mean, what was the highlight of being being on a working holiday visa in Australia?
I think to your point, I suppose inadvertently having a bit of a try before you buy scenario, the benefit of the working holiday visa and the work that you can do out there is you meet so many like-minded people that essentially for a year become your friends and almost your family in some instances. You know, I keep in touch with quite a few people that I met the first time around Australia, one guy in particular. So I suppose it's just those connections you make, and everybody's so different compared to the UK. You grow close, and you grow close to the land, the people, the way of life, and we're very much looking forward to getting back to that, hopefully.
And we'll go back a step, mate. When you told Deanna that you're planning on joining her on the trip, mate, was she happy, or was she a little bit like, oh, there goes a bit of me freedom? Or be honest, mate, what was she like?
She claims that she always knew all along that I would make the decision to go with her, but I think there was an element of relief to it, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough, isn't it, when one partner wants to go and wants to stay. Once you find that special someone, we get it here a lot where maybe people on working holiday visas arrive single and end up meeting someone who's at a different visa stage, and maybe one or the other is eligible, but they haven't spent enough relevant time together to, you know, to have to be a partner on the visa. You guys did it a bit backwards, but I mean, it's pretty good. And the way that you went about it would have been really exciting because you only had a couple of months before you actually jumped on the plane and got here. Was there any special places that you remember that you just think, wow, I'd love to go there again?
I mean, as a state, we loved Queensland. You know, the weather up there, the way of life, it was definitely up our street. And on the other hand, Perth was lovely as well. It was the first place that we went to. We landed in Perth. We actually had a wedding to go out there at the time. And we just fell in love with it. So it's going to be, we're flying into Perth when we get out there. We're going to see some old friends, places we worked at. And I think it's going to be pretty difficult to land in Perth and not end up staying there, to be honest. But we'll see what happens.
So just for the listeners, where are you planning on staying?
Obviously, with the way the visa works, Victoria, we're waiting for the grant from the government, but we have been invited by Victoria. So realistically, we probably should be going to Melbourne. I've got friends out there, and actually, given my background of work, it's probably best for me to go to Melbourne. But like I said, we could go to Perth and we could fall in love with it again. We're going to kind of leave our options open. We're pretty good at taking things as they come along. So we'll see what happens.
And how old are you yourself and D, mate?
We are both 29 years old.
Yep. So young and got everything ahead of you, which is good. So you being the main applicant, you did the skills assessment. How was the skills assessment process, mate? Was it easy?
It was tedious. So I'll take you back to 2020 when we first decided. So obviously this was just when lockdown had started. We had a conversation with another immigration agency, and I'm not going to name who they were. I'm not going to say who the guy was. He was nice enough, but he was very downbeat on what our chances were given my background. And I think coming away from that conversation, Dee and I were a bit put off by the thought of it. And then after about 6 months, 12 months, we kind of picked up the conversation again. Do you know what? Let's just do it. So we started that initial process off our own back, i.e. the skills assessment and the English test. So the skills assessment, Dee's really good at research. She's got a background in travel agency and what have you. So she is meticulous with everything she does. So she made a list of everything that I needed, color coded it, and she stuck it next to the wall where I do my work on a daily basis so that I couldn't ignore it. Not that I absolutely would have done anyway, but I probably do take a bit of nagging to get things done.
You're a bloke, mate. We're built like that. We need our precious and loved ones to give us that little push now and then.
Exactly. Yeah. So a bit of nagging. It was for me. I don't enjoy sitting at a laptop all day and trying to plug away with the detail orientated side of things. So. Initially when we started doing it, I downloaded 3 payslips and I downloaded 3 of other documents, and I said to her, look, I've got this stuff, and she went, I think you're going to need more than that. I think we're going to have to kill them with quantity over quality. And actually, a lot of it was obviously quality stuff, and we took a lot of it away. I worked with somebody who tweaked CVs in Australia so that I could make it fit for purpose. So I did that, and a lot of the documents that I personally needed were difficult to come by because of the way that the services worked with the company I was working with at the time, Sky. So a lot of it is automated online. So you try and find an option where you click it. So you kind of have to make things up as you go along, and you have to talk to various people in HR and what they called life at Sky at the time. And you send documents and you just say, look, I need an official head to kind of sign off on this because it isn't an official document that comes from their services. So yeah. It was difficult. I think the wait time was particularly nerve-wracking. I think the wait time at that time was 10 weeks. I know it's definitely gone up now. So we consider ourselves very lucky in hindsight. But we managed to get all the documents together. And when we first logged on, I didn't realize that I would have to go all the way back to my primary school days of when I started going to primary school and what have you. So that was interesting. And some of the less relevant courses that I did at college, for example, performing arts, I don't have certificates for those anymore because I'm 29 years old, and I've probably moved on from that part of my life. At least I like to think so. So it's difficult going back that far.
You're still performing now, mate. You're just performing in podcasts.
No, exactly. That's it. So it's difficult going back that far and trying to remember, the various dates that you went to school and, the courses that you did, the grades you came out with. But a lot of the relevant certificates, thankfully, I still had to hand. So I was able to, you know, able to get that in, and thankfully came out with a positive skills assessment, which, you know, doing off your own back, I think was actually quite impressive. Particularly, you know, given some of the documents were quite hard to come by.
Yeah, it is, mate. You should be proud of that. I mean, like, you know, it's obviously a service that we provide, and I'm very interested to know who the first agent you spoke to was. But yeah, it's good that you moved forward and cracked on with that. So you got your positive skills assessment. At what point did you do your English test? While you were waiting for your skills assessment, or did you do that before or after?
We did that after. So I'm one of these people that can't mix things up. So I, you know, we focused on the skills assessment first, and then we moved on to the English test after. So Shelley was amazing. I joined quite a few of her webinars on the English test, and it was good to get a bit of background on what to expect on the day, how the test will work, various processes. The essay writing webinar I joined was particularly helpful to kind of show how to break things down. And obviously it's not about the contents of the essay, so to speak, but it's more the structure that you write in. So
Joe, just to interrupt you there, mate. Sure. Shelley was part of our tutoring team for the listeners and everything, and we put together some webinars about how to pass the English exam, because, you know, the English exam is a huge hurdle, and for UK passport holders, it's not a mandatory part, but it's a way you get extra points. But for some passport holders, the English test has to get done. So it's good that, you know, you were able to use that service. What score did you end up getting, mate?
I ended up with superior. So
nice.
You know, like I said to you guys beforehand, but my university days, I've got a background in journalism, and when I was working for Sky at the time, a lot of the stuff that came through, I'd end up copywriting. So I'd like to think that my English was, you know, up to that level. But it's one thing knowing that it's at that level; it's another thing performing on the day. So, you know, I downloaded a couple of other apps to help me on the day, and I, in hindsight, probably could have done a bit more revision than I did, and was probably relying on my background a bit too much. And I did it down in Portsmouth, and I did it down in Portsmouth, and I swear to God, I got there on the day, and it was me and one other chap, and he was a tradie, and he turned around to me and filled me with confidence when he said that it was his seventh attempt.
Seventh.
Yeah, I know. I couldn't believe it. So naturally, from that point on, I was a bit nervous, and I got in and I sat down. I checked the headphones on, and obviously the first part was listening. So you know, the sentences gradually get longer and longer, and you have to repeat them. And I think, you know, I won't repeat, but after the third or fourth, I think I got a couple of words in, and a various expletive came out my mouth, and I realized what I'd done, and I paused it for a second, and I just said to myself, you know, take a few seconds, take a deep breath, and we'll keep on going. And I think the English test is meant to take about 4 hours, and I finished it in about 2.5. And I walked out and I called my partner. I said, I'm done. And she, I think her initial thought was, what have you done wrong? But that was on a Tuesday or Wednesday. The wait time for results is about 4 days. So we were going away that weekend, and I was sat working on the Friday, kind of winding down, getting ready to leave. And I got an email saying, your results are in. So I kind of nervously thought to myself, there's two ways I can play this. I can look at them. If they're good, I'll tell her and I'm a hero for the weekend. If they're bad, I'll keep it to myself till Monday, because I don't want hell all weekend. And, you know, thankfully, obviously, I opened the results, and I was chuffed a bit to find out that that we ended up with superior. So it was an interesting process. It definitely took me back to my university and school days. But if there was one piece of advice I could give to people, is I would say, don't underestimate it. This, you know, whatever your background, you know, do the work, do the revision, and your results will show.
Yeah, it's really hard. Like, the way I explain it to people is, it's not teaching you how to read, write, speak, and listen again. It's teaching you how to pass the exam. Very similar to a driving test. You know, when you do your driving test, Joe, you've got to hold the steering wheel a certain way and look in the mirrors, you know, X amount of times to appease the instructor. It's pretty much, would you say that's a fair example of, you know, a similarity to the English test?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's almost tweaking up on the small details. You know, in hindsight, isn't it? You never forget to learn. You never forget how to learn to ride a bike, do you? But, you know, sometimes you get back on the bike and you're a bit wobbly. So.
Oh, 100%. It's just getting that old, you know, perfect practice makes perfect. So, okay. So, and at what point did you join the Down Under Centre to start processing the visa?
I believe, to my memory, it was after we'd passed the English test and the skill assessment. So we passed those and we were kind of, iffing and butting what to do. And Dee had obviously heard about you guys and I kind of said, well, you know, look, let's go with them. And we had a chat with Jenny and she was really positive about our chances. And we asked when we should be looking to get the stuff in. And she obviously said, do it as soon as possible. So we kind of did it from that point, really.
All right. So you put in you put in the EOI. You got your invitation to apply, and how were you notified about the invite to apply?
I got a text actually. I missed a call from Jenny. Dee missed a call from Jenny. She was in the shower at the time, and it was a bit of a weird day. So I was working from home. My dad was in our apartment doing some work on one of the rooms, and I missed this call, and I got a text, and I'd just come off the call myself with work, and I saw the text and I was in complete disbelief and I shouted to Dee through the apartment and I'm pretty sure that our entire apartment block heard me screaming. And next thing I know, I can hear Dee weeping in the shower. Dad doesn't really know what's going on. And I've called Jenny back asking what on earth is going on. We were just in total shock and disbelief. We couldn't, you know, we'd obviously put in for a 491 as well to South Australia, I think it was. So we had that. We had that in and we obviously had the 190 in as well, and we couldn't believe that it was the 190 that came out. So these are big believer in manifesting. I've built onto that as well, and we were hopefully manifesting any kind of visa to come through, and she'd had a feeling that it was going to be a 491, so it was sod's law that the 190 came in.
Oh, it's so good. It's such good news, especially if, you know, like moving to Melbourne and everything like that. So all right, so you're at this point now, so you've got the good news from Jenny, and I know how much Jenny loves telling people the good news. It's kind of like the best bit of the job, Joe, as you can appreciate. We get lots of clients, lots of questions, but giving someone, you know, telling them that they've had their invitation to apply is just amazing. And then the best news, obviously, is when the visa's granted. So you've been waiting 10 months, currently waiting 10 months at the moment for that, you know, to get the visa granted. And at what point did you decide to move from the UK and then start traveling? You're in Thailand at the moment. So did you go straight from the UK to Thailand or did you stop anywhere else?
No, we went straight from the UK to Thailand. Yeah. So we landed here on the 26th of September, but the pair of us actually stopped working about early September. So we could kind of, you know, we could go home and spend a bit of time with our loved ones.
Yeah. And okay, so you went straight to, and was that the plan, or with the delays in immigration granting visas at the moment, was it always a plan to do a travel before you entered Australia and on your passports?
We toyed with the idea of it, yeah. I mean, there's pros and cons either way of doing these things, right? So at the start of the year, we were talking and saying to ourselves, well, look, maybe we go out on a tourist visa and we try and go for a bridging visa, and you know, we kind of weighed up the pros and cons there and decided actually the cons probably outweigh the pros here. We'd love to get back out there, but we decided against that. And gradually as the months wore on, you know, we were very much happy with the fact that we'd even gotten to this point. You know, a couple of years ago, we probably would have torn your hand off if you'd said, look, you'll be waiting for your visa grant for a 190. We would have been in complete disbelief. So
yeah,
definitely. We count ourselves really lucky, you know, particularly given the way that things happen with COVID. And actually, I think for the most part, it's probably worked to our favor, which is, you know, I know that COVID was a terrible thing and it devastated a lot of people's lives. But, you know, from a personal standpoint and rather selfishly, it was great for us from a visa perspective. So we got really lucky there. But going back to your point about traveling, so we got to about I think it was about end of July, start of August, and this is where it gets quite personal for me. But I was, you know, I was working away, and I loved my job. I should set that record straight for a start, but there were some personal difficulties around the job, and you know, knowing that we got to the point of it was almost uncertainty of when we were going to leave, and I think that started to hit home more and more the way that the process went, the way the process moved along. You know, we wanted to get out there, and we were desperate for it to happen, and we'd wake up every day thinking, you know, checking our phones to see if we had an email or a missed call from Jenny and yourself. So I think that obviously it played its toll on Dee, but it played its toll on me more so, I think. So I ended up going to the doctor after a little bit, because I was, you know, it was racking away at me. And she turned around to me and actually said, I think you're dealing with a bit of anxiety and depression. So it got to the point where I was so bad with things that were going on. Actually, I got signed off of work for 2 weeks, and I was almost in denial about it. You know, you don't realize how badly these things do well on you and do affect you. And, you know, the process and the thought process was, you know, that can't happen to me. And I don't, you know, it's ridiculous that it has happened to me. And actually, after those 2 weeks, I took a bit of time to take a step back. I'm a big gym lover. So I do CrossFit and I do Olympic weightlifting. And that's my release, so to speak. So, I kept on doing that. I was probably going a bit more than usual. I was spending time with family, friends, loved ones. I played a bit of golf, and I was spending time with Dee, and actually that was revitalizing for me. And I got back into work on the first day, and I couldn't believe, you know, I apologized to my team and I said I didn't realize how bad I was. And that first day I logged back on was the day that I actually had my notice into work. So I had a conversation with Dee in those 2 weeks, and I said to my family as well, I think it's time that actually I move on and start this new chapter of our lives. So we toyed with the idea of maybe going traveling, and actually I think that was probably the igniter, so to speak, of us making that move. So we that Monday I handed my notice in and said, look, this is going to be it now, and I think it's time for me to think about moving on. And they were very accepting of it. There was a bit of a worrying period where it turns out they've made my notice period 3 months and not 1 month. And we'd booked our flights and we booked our visa, so that was a bit of a concern. But if there was, again, one piece of advice I'd give to everybody, is be transparent with the people you work with, and be transparent with your family. Thankfully I'd told my workplace the whole way along that it would likely be about September, October time, and they were happy to take that as gospel, and they said, we'll consider that your 3 month period, and you can finish up at the start of September. So that was huge for us. And I stopped work on the 7th of September, took a bit of time to see family, friends. I don't think 2 weeks was probably enough to see all of them. But we did it, and we've not looked back. And I think going back to my point about being signed off for 2 weeks, the one thing I would say to people is don't underestimate the power of saying goodbye to people. It is really tough. I thought it was going to be quite easy. I'm quite an independent person, but actually it was really difficult, particularly with some of the older family members. Realistically, certainly for me, one or two of them, it's probably saying goodbye forever, which is pretty sad, and it's pretty difficult. And
it is.
And it's the same with animals as well. So I wouldn't underestimate that. Underestimate that at all.
Joe, just from the purpose of this conversation, thank you so much for, I guess, giving us a little bit of a really good insight to you and all that. And well done, man. Like, if you're ever feeling a bit low, I think people in the old, 10 years ago wouldn't really talk about issues and everything like that. And we're really encouraged to talk about it and listen to what the body's saying. And it's worked out well for you. And I'm really glad that you're in this point now and how you shared that with our listeners, because it is saying goodbye, and it's reality, isn't it? You know, life goes on. No matter how we're feeling, how people around us are feeling, life will always go on. And sometimes it's nice to be able to take a bit of a breather, isn't it? Get yourself ready to get back on and start making those decisions. And all the decisions you've made to now, to, you know, to where you are in Thailand, you know, you back those decisions. You're really satisfied with everything you've done so far.
Yeah, definitely. You know, coming and traveling around Thailand's been amazing. We've never been to Asia. We've never been to Thailand. We've never been to Asia, and we've loved every minute of it. We started in Bangkok. And we've gradually been making our way north. So we went to Kanchanaburi, Ayutthaya, Chiang Mai, and we're in Pai now. We've got a couple more places to go up here before we move back down south. But we've loved every minute of it. The culture, the way of life, the people. It's been enlightening, and it's been the most amazing experience. So it's been great. And you know what the future holds for us, we don't know yet. We could, you know, like I said, we've got Thailand for upwards of 3 months. We could go to New Zealand afterwards. We could go to Cambodia, Vietnam. We're kind of just going to play it by ear.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, it's all you really can do, because, you know, like, I'm someone who really believes that people lodging a visa onshore, so that means that, you know, you're waiting onshore or coming on tourist visas, sometimes that can put a lot of pressure on people. It definitely puts a bit of pressure on us when people are asking us for information. You know, we might have put in the visa, but, you know, we're waiting for immigration to give the visa grant, which sometimes can take time. But you know, you've got a few options, which is really good. You've got the options a bit off the New Zealand working holiday visa as well, and other, islands and areas of Southeast Asia that you can visit. Is there a time in your head, Joe, like what would happen if the visa wasn't granted in 6 months or in 3 months? Is there a certain time where you think, oh, wow, you know, start to panic, or you're content with everything?
I think we're fairly content with everything, to be honest with you. So We've obviously got that plan of New Zealand in our heads. If we start to run out of money, we can fall back on that. We can do some work. The other thing, obviously, is everybody's aware of, I think most people are aware of the changes to the trade agreement between the UK and Australia. So we've been out on a working holiday visa to Australia already. We only spent the 1 year out there, so we could, in theory, July go back out there and do our second and third years because of the changes. So yeah, Actually whatever happens in the next year, we're going to end up in Australia, and you would imagine, yeah, you'd imagine in those 2 years that we get back out there that we would end up with our permanent visa, hopefully. So there are so many options for us and so much to fall back on. So
I think that's so key, to have those options, and you have so many to fall back on. It's a really good point, what's going to happen in July. It really opens the doors. I'm not sure how the farmers are going to feel about it with all their, I'm not sure who's going to be picking the fruit and doing the harvest work. But for yourself, it's such a relief. It must be a good feeling now that you've got a bit of an adventure. Would it be fair to say this is probably what you were looking for, was to have that bit of uncertainty and to really challenge yourself for both you and Dee?
Yeah, I think there's a few different things. There's a few different approaches. You know, the uncertainty definitely helped. I think, you know, the personal difficulties probably wouldn't have made a difference to our decision before we left. I don't think it would have made a massive, it would have changed things a great deal, but it definitely helped. So the uncertainty, the personal difficulties that Dee and I were both experiencing before we left. And you know, we're explorers and we're travelers. We've been to Morocco, Dubai, Iceland, obviously Australia. We love traveling and we love exploring. So actually, that love of that side of things definitely played a part as well.
You started the podcast saying Australia wasn't for you. What was the reason at that point?
I think it was just it was the stereotypical view of Australia that you get as a kid. You know, my dad had the opportunity to, I think it was either USA or Australia. I think it was Australia.
Hang on, mate, you're not getting out of this one. What's the stereotype of Australians? Go on, mate.
Not Australians. Australia itself. So, you know, okay, specifically the wildlife, should we say?
Oh, were you scared of the animals?
Yeah. It was, you know, the snakes and spiders. I'm 29 years old and I've probably grown out of that part of my life now. And I held a couple of snakes when I was out there, and you know, I dealt with I think it was a venomous spider when we were out there. But I'm a bit braver now in that part of my life. So
that's good. Well, you'd want to be if you're in Thailand.
Exactly.
I reckon Thailand would be probably more scary than Australia. But when you move to Victoria, mate, you'll be surprised. Lisa, who we do the podcast with, mate, she's got this fascination with sharks at the moment in South Australia. We interviewed Heather in a podcast, and Heather was like, she can't wait to go out there and meet the sharks. It's so interesting what people think about Australia with wildlife and all that. But in Victoria, like, we don't I am in a regional area of Victoria. Don't see anything.
No, I bet.
Anything that can kill me anyway.
No, exactly. And it doesn't really bother me anymore. You know, when we were out there the first time, I think that was probably the reality check. I think I saw three snakes, one from a bus. The other one I nearly went over with a bike because I thought it was a stick. And another one I held. So, and they, you know, they didn't bother me. The one thing that nearly did get us was, we were in Broome at the time, and there's, I don't know if you remember, back in 2018, Broome had that 6.5 earthquake.
Yeah.
So we were there at the time, and that nearly got us. But that was okay in the end. But that was a complete shock, actually.
Geez, Broome's a beautiful part. I love Broome.
Yeah, I'll give them a shout out, because it was a great 4 months. But we worked at Eco Beach, the Eco Beach Resort, about 2-3 hours out of Broome. And it is just the most, it's just the most amazing place. And it was the most amazing experience, obviously, working there in Rottnest Island. So we were very, very lucky.
Yeah, they're gorgeous parts of the world to work when you think about it, like, especially where you were, just out Broome. That's just awesome. The beaches and all that sort of stuff there. And if you like the weather, I think it gets a bit humid in the summer months. But if you can get there sort of springtime, it's just good. Do you remember what part of the year you were there, mate?
Rotto, we were there. It was peak summer going into spring, I believe. And then we went. It's peak summer going into autumn. Sorry, so. We had some really hot days, but it was really lovely. So you'd work 4 hours, go to the beach and work 4 hours, or on your off day, you'd either go back to Perth or you'd just spend all day at the beach. It was lovely. And then Broome, we were there from about, I want to say it's about May, June time, through to about August.
Yeah, see, that's time. Good times, so, mate. They're good times. To be
Broome was hot on those days that you could be working all day. Those days were real hot, but it was wicked. Yeah. It was really cool.
Yeah, I always sort of picture like sort of Broome, you want to get there kind of July, probably June through till sort of September, when it's cold in Victoria and South Australia. It's amazing up there, but it's so busy as well, because a lot of our senior citizens and all that go off camp, spend their pensions and all that, and go around traveling. Mm. And it's just nice up there. So, all right. So let's get back to now. So you're now waiting for a visa to be granted. And then when for argument's sake, if the visa got granted tomorrow, would you be rushing to Australia, or were you still looking to fulfill some of those targets you want to meet traveling now?
I think we'd stay for the 2 months that we've got in Thailand, or certainly try and fulfill as much of that as possible. We want to go south, and we want to check out the beaches. We want to do a bit of island hopping, which would be lovely. But it's just the uncertainty around it. You just never know, do you? If it was tomorrow, we'd obviously be thrilled. We would probably stick around for a little bit before flying out there. But if it was to be granted whilst we're out here, we'd be going straight out there after Thailand.
All right, so you're going to arrive, you're going to spend a bit of time in WA and all that. Is there anything that, if you could look back in 5 years from where you are now and what you want to achieve in Australia, is there anything that you really want to tick boxes, Joe?
I think the main thing is not go back to the kind of lifestyle I had in the UK. Obviously,
what was that lifestyle, Joe? What are you trying to avoid, mate?
This isn't at all a dig, because obviously a lot of it is my own doing. But I was living in Guildford at the time, and I was working for Sky TV. So I was driving to Brentford. I was driving to Brentford every day, and that could be, you know, 2-3 hours worth of commuting every day. And I'm not saying that's it's a problem. I'm not going to experience that in Australia, but I think the work-life balance, the lifestyle, and the way of working that people have in Australia is a bit more laid back, and it's a bit more up my street. I know that there's probably a better work from home balance based on what I've heard from various companies as well. There's a better work from home balance as well, which would be lovely. So I don't want to be going back to the point of, you know, working myself 9 to 5 and going to, you know, then just go to the gym and that's my day done. You know, I want to be able to enjoy life a bit more, and I want to doss around a bit. And actually, I think Australia offers that work life balance that I'm looking for a bit better than the UK does.
Yeah, it's so cool, man, because you don't have to be a superstar or be popular on, you know, I don't know, social media or whatever it is, be famous in any way to have a really good story. And I think your story is really good. You know, you're 29, you established a really good career with a pretty reputable business. You know, that time you sat in the meeting and thinking, geez, I better let Dee know I'm coming with her. It's those moments where if you never did that, mate, your life would probably be doing that drive. So yeah. I really hope that you get to that part, because lots of people, when you said stereotype before, I was thinking we get it a lot, like, oh, I just want to go to the beach every day and I just want to sit in the sun. And I sometimes have to pull some of our clients back and say, but, you know, we do pay taxes. It does rain here. Yeah. We do get storms. We still get, I don't know, people bug you in your country where you're from. People are still going to bug you here. But I do believe the work-life balance, and if you're an outside sort of person, if you're outdoors, got a young family, then Australia is just amazing. Some of the people, I know we're going to be interviewing a guy, Ben, shortly, who set up his own plumbing business and all that, and he's flourishing. Like, he wouldn't look back in a second. It's so different. I really hope that you get to do that. Have you got a company or an organization you're planning on hitting up, mate, for when you get here?
I mean, you know, everybody back at home, everybody you speak to says, when you get out there, let me know and I'll put you in contact. I've got the benefit. I won't name the name of the person, but I've got the benefit that somebody that I used to work with in PR actually works for Binge out there. So,
oh, nice.
I'll probably be utilizing that contact when I get out there. And obviously, you know, my background is specifically in the streaming services, and less so the, you know, buy our services, more so the when you see a funny clip on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter, that's more me. So
nice.
Ideally more brand marketing, but we'll see how things go.
That's right. I have to sneak you our logo, mate. Next time watching Game of Thrones on Binge or something, you might be able to throw in the DUC logo, see if anyone notices it. What do you reckon?
I mean, absolutely do. I said I'd never watch Game of Thrones, and I love it now. So
there you go. The message, people, is you've got to try new things. Without doing this stuff, it's amazing, isn't it? Everyone's life is just that little decision that you make at some point. It might be bad, but you can always turn around. And if you don't like Australia, you can go back. But are you going to wonder? And we get so many clients, Joe, that say to us, we should have done this 10 years ago when they were a bit younger, when immigration was a bit easier. And it's like, yeah, cool. Yeah, you could have. And it didn't, you know, at the moment you can't, because you can't go back in time. Mm. But you are where you are now. It's so good. Like it's, I don't know. I'm really passionate about stuff like that. Hearing people's choices, decisions, that one decision. I know for me, it was leaving Melbourne and going to Ayers Rock to be a plumber at the resort. Mm. Something so simple. I didn't really have big plans of traveling, and you end up where you are. It's so good. And to be 29 again, mate, with absolutely everything ahead of you with this whole new journey. What about, like, you know, settling? Are you looking to sort of, I assume you'd be renting when you first get here for the first few years, or are you looking at buying a place?
I suspect we'll probably look into renting initially, and then depending on what the job prospects are and stuff over the next couple of years, we'll probably look into buying at some point. You know, we did a bit of research into what my pay bracket would be when I move out there, and we were fairly staggered when we found out that for the same level role out there, I earn double and a bit more what I would have earned back home, which is just nuts. And I'm fairly confident that given my background and the years I've worked and my way of working, that I'd probably be able to fulfill that or go for a role above what I was previously on. So it is exciting to know that there's you know, there are those prospects out there.
You just don't let Dee know that, mate, or she might be the one picturing herself on the beach all day while Joe's off working. What do you reckon, mate? She like that? You reckon she'll do it to you?
No, she enjoys working too much. She's got a background in massage, and she was she was doing that at Eco Beach. She's been training up. Since we've been waiting for the visa. So she's got her career prospects, and she's pretty ambitious as well. I think she'll enjoy getting her hands back on. So
yeah, good on you, Joe. That's so good. Well, Joe, mate, I reckon you're an absolute legend, by the way. I think thank you for sharing a lot of, I guess, a few personal little bits in there, and I think that's what makes it's just reality, and people should be able to talk about it. And I think lots of people go through different stages of migration, and everyone's different. You know, you've got a young couple like yourself who are eligible for working holiday visas who have really hit the jackpot with the new rules regarding the working holiday visa, because that sort of helps you make that decision to say, well, if we don't get the visa granted for whatever reason, I'm sure you will, you know, because July is quite a while away from where we are now. But you've got all these options. And in between that journey from the UK to Australia, it's going to be really fun, isn't it? That's all it's going to be. It's going to be fun. Are you working? Are you planning on working, or are you just kicking back, relaxing now?
Just kicking back and relaxing. You know, I've worked my ass off. I don't know if I should have said that word, but I've been working my butt off for the last 3-4 years, and again, it's not to say that I didn't love the job. You know, I was lucky enough to go to the House of the Dragon premiere, and I've been lucky enough to interview some ridiculous names down the years. And
who's the most famous person, mate?
I don't think it's a case of who'd be most famous. I think they're all so different. You know, I've been lucky that I've done the whole House of the Dragon cast. Sir Jackie Stewart, who obviously is the F1 legend, Paul Gascoigne, Sir Geoff Hurst. It's been a pretty wicked couple of years. So everybody you speak to is different, and everybody has their own story. Obviously, as I'm sure you'll find out on in all the podcast interviews, you know, they all throw out their own differences, and everybody's so interesting as well. So yeah, I've been pretty lucky, but that way of working and that style of working took its toll on me, and definitely something that I'd be keen to avoid going forwards.
Yeah, good on you, mate. Well, now you get to tick, you know, being interviewed by Wes Zamp from the Down Under Centre, mate. That's got to be up there too with those other legends. But
yeah, exactly,
mate. You know, what can I say? You've done so well, and thanks for taking the time as well. I know you got lots of time at the moment. We saw before we did the podcast, you showed us where you were staying in Thailand. It just looks absolutely amazing. And you mentioned as well the what was it, £3 to fill the car up with fuel?
Yeah, £3 to fill up the scooter that we used for 2 days is pretty impressive. We're actually going out on a scooter. We're looking to hire a scooter again for the next couple of days. And Dee, to her own confession, she won't drive it, and she's relying on me to drive. But she says I'm getting a bit too confident on it now. I dodge and weave between the traffic. So,
all right.
Yeah, a little bit too confident on the scooter now.
You need to wear a stack hat.
I know, exactly. Yeah.
That's what we call them in Oz, a stack hat. You ever heard of that before? Do you call them a stack hat in the UK? You know, a bicycle helmet? What do you call them?
Yeah, I think we just call them helmets. I'm going to come up with something there. I think my girlfriend would probably attest for me not needing one based on who I am as a person. But yeah,
We'll let her know that the Down Under Centre advises that you both should be wearing stack hats when you're attempting to cruise between traffic on one of those dodgy little scooters in Thailand.
Yeah, well, I've already been pulled up by the police twice. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they are hot. They're hot on it out here. Like not wearing, but you know, like people from other countries driving scooters full stop. If you don't have an international license, you'll get fined £500 on the spot, and then you can drive off.
Yeah. Oh, you can drive on. Okay.
I know, it's crazy. I will say I've got the international permit, so it's fine. But yeah.
It's a bit of a tourist spot for Aussies growing up. Bali, Thailand and all that sort of stuff. You get lots of them. I've got a few of my oldest boys, his mates and all that, take off a bit of the footy season in the winter here in Melbourne and go over there. Sounds like a great place. And I think it's a little bit different. When we lived in London, you could just shoot off to Europe or in other areas of Europe, I guess, and go on a holiday. So, but Joe, mate, you've been an absolute star, mate. Thank you so much for taking the time. And I really hope that the visa gets granted. And well done for making the right decisions, mate. And I wish you and Dee all the best. And I hope to see you guys for one of our Down Under Centre meetups in Victoria. So don't be a stranger, mate. We'll see you on the DUC club, no doubt. And yeah, thank you very much for joining us, mate.
No, I loved it. Thank you very much. And we'll definitely be coming to the DUC meetup. So looking forward to the first one.
Good on you guys. Well, look, that was a nice little podcast. And thanks again to Joe Reed. So all right, guys, take care. And if you are on the roads, do wear a stack hat if you're coming to Oz. Speak soon.